Hawk up my stuff and buy my ticket to Tokyo. Read the cherry blossoms all about the canal. I need a new dream, I need a new dream. One on one day from pretty pink petals. Hawk up my stuff and buy my ticket to Tokyo. I'll go when I get in. Mama, say a prayer for me. Papa, try and I'll worry. Brothers, I've been thinking about you. I'll be home soon.
Who doesn't love a good debate? Hey there, I'm Ryan Funk, here with you for another episode of You Talk. Did you know the University of Manitoba had a debate club? I sure didn't. So I connected with two of the members to learn a little bit more about, you know, what debate looks like and what people can expect in this coming year, in this upcoming school year. And maybe afterwards, you might be a little more interested in joining up. Let's get into it.
What first got you into debate? I know it's pretty fun to watch debates online, whether it's like YouTube, you're watching your individuals like Vosh, or I guess beforehand, like Destiny, those kind of types. It's really fun and interesting to watch debates and people, rhetorical strategies and ways to kind of one-up their competitors. So what was it? Because you mentioned that it was high school that you first started. What first attracted you to it?
I think what most people would say is that they like arguing, and so do I. So that was kind of the starting point. And on top of that, there are shows that I really like to watch. I know CBC, every Sunday morning, I believe it's Sunday morning, there would be the show with Terry O'Reilly, and then after that it was CBC Debaters with Steve Patterson. So I always like to watch that. That's what kind of got me interested. And then in high school they had a debate club. I thought it would be super, super formal and everything, but I went to one of the meetings. It was just normal people having a fun time arguing. And then on top of that, after that, you got into strategies for a little while after that.
But. Yeah, when we were talking before, you're mentioning just how it was your first time kind of at the U of M getting into it. And of course, with COVID and everything, you can't quite do everything that you wanted. But walk me through that first year. What was some of the differences that you found going from high school debate to the university level?
There weren't actually a lot of differences. I think it's because, in high school, we also... it was kind of a club that didn't have a lot of members when we started, and we kind of grew it as we went. And it's kind of been the same experience in university since we were closed for a full year, so there wasn't any debate happening in 2020 with the pandemic. But then after we started, or 2021 for that matter either, and then in 2022 we started going back to full in-person learning, and we had a club that didn't have a lot of members in it, so we were looking at getting the membership back up and getting activities started. So it was largely informal, and it still is if you're interested in joining, right?
Oh, I mean, that sounds like a lot of fun. Like, you go, you're learning, you're building your linguistics and just your ability to think about a solution from different angles. When you're approaching a topic, what are some of the best tools you like to use when breaking it down and bringing it to the debate field?
Well, one thing that we always talk about is that you always try to take, in debate practice, you always try to take your opponent at their best and not at their worst. Because some people think, oh, well, it's a technicality that I can get them on, and that doesn't actually work. Like, it doesn't work in debates, it doesn't work on judges. You want to take your opponent at your best, at their best, and really get the big picture of what it is they're trying to say, and you've got to refute that big argument in order to actually win or score points in a debate.
So walk me through a debate. What are you trying to do? What do the point systems look like? And how do you determine who was the winner at the end of it?
This would be more for tournaments. In the U of M debate club itself, we have debates, and there's usually not much of a scoring system. We kind of just base it on what could you do to improve what you did. But in a debate tournament, for example, there is a scoring system. You get, you know, there's different categories for like argumentation, refutation, things like that. And then you kind of get, and delivery, and you get scored on a letter grade based on that. So like A's and B's and that kind of thing. And then after that, there's a final score that you get from 70 to 95. That's generally how Manitoba does it for the MSDA, Manitoba Speech and Debate Association. for tournaments that I've been to, anyway.
It can be completely different in different provinces, then?
I'm honestly just unfamiliar with other provinces. I just know that's how Manitoba does it. I imagine it's probably similar, but I couldn't tell you exactly.
Well, I mean, maybe as things kind of open up a little bit more, and maybe this upcoming school year, you'll get to experience maybe tournaments in other places.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's actually a good point that you brought up, which is that this year we're expanding at the U of M Debate Club, and we're trying to send teams to other provinces so that they can go and debate. And we're getting prepared for that by getting funding from the U of M, and, you know, looking at maybe other sources of funding so that we can send team members to debate.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun, going out, talking about important topics. So for yourself, what are some of the selling points of debate when someone's looking for different clubs or extracurricular activities heading into the school year? They see this debate club and they're like, huh, this seems interesting. Why should I join this?
That's an excellent question. Well, the first thing I'd bring up is that if you were involved in high school debate and if you liked it, then this is a good way to keep going with it. It's informal. It doesn't take up a lot of your time, but it's still, there's a lot of learning in that process. So we do presentations and things like that for ways to improve your debates. We have debates. The U of M Debate Club is a great way to do that. But also, it really, this was a quote from Chris Voss, who had a book on negotiation. And it was basically just that life is a negotiation. And what you learn, like, you know, when you're crossing the street, it's a negotiation. When you do anything, especially things like if you go to a job interview, you need to know how to sell yourself. Mm-hmm. And these are all things that you do learn in debate club. So like you learn about, you know, you learn about refutation and how to say things that so that you can present the best possible picture of what you have, right? So this is something you learn in debate club. So debate is a necessary skill, not just for going to debates, but also in life.
Yeah, it applies to kind of everything, really.
Yeah, exactly.
How many stories do you see when scrolling on Reddit of people with horrible experiences in the job interview? They completely freeze up. So this could be a great opportunity to learn how to sell yourself.
It's just that, like, you know, whether it's selling yourself in job interview or just for anything else, even, you know, when you're arguing with a friend and you want to be right, you know?
Exactly. Be like, my character is better than your character, yeah. Sort of thing. What sort of topics do you usually cover in debates, or what are some that have been really exciting and things you have wanted to sink your teeth into? You're like, yes, this is perfect. I'm really excited to talk about this.
As a club, we cover a wide variety of topics, obviously. We as a club, like, we talk about the big picture issues that are facing Canadians every day as a Manitoba.
And, as you look at the news, there's so many relevant things to talk about right
exactly,
now.
Exactly, especially right now. There are so many things that we can talk about, and we tend to discuss them, even the controversial ones. We tend to stay away from those for a tournament, for example, but since this is an informal setting of debate, we tend to discuss everything. So, you know, one of my favorite things to talk about would be the housing crisis and, you know, potential solutions that we have, and we discuss that. There are also some other ones such as, for example, right now we have a population issue where Canada's population is increasing because of immigration, but otherwise it's declining. And we talk about what are some potential solutions to that? Well, there is immigration, but there's also the moral aspect of, well, your population can't afford to have kids. And so how can we address other affordability issues related to that? So there are a lot of things that we discuss at the debate club, and most of them are going to be relevant to your life as a Canadian.
There's so many things, whether it's the convoy and racism that's continuing to grow in Canada, unfortunately, just in Ontario, a guy was arrested under suspicion that he's connected to a neo-Nazi group. This is the first time it's happened in Canada, which is very scary. Like, housing, incredibly important. No one can really afford housing. Rent is unaffordable. Food, interest rates. There's just so much to talk about, and it's a great opportunity to familiarize yourself with them more. You're breaking it down. You're seeing, okay, what are potential solutions to these things? So you mentioned housing. How'd you get interested in housing and urbanization? Why is that something that you've just been connected to?
Oh, the reason I'm interested in a lot of things is mostly because of YouTube. I just happen to watch a lot of it.
As things go.
Yeah. So, you know, YouTube. And then, you know, I just kind of stumbled upon housing. And I thought it was very interesting because it's an argument that I think that you would be able to agree on whether you're on the left or on the right. But the reason it's never implemented, I think, is because of politics. So in the sense that I think the main problem with the housing crisis is that, so right now we have roads, and to use that, it's free. So what this encourages is for people to drive more. So they would live somewhere and drive for everything else, right? And then what that means is that, so we've got that, and we've also got parking lots now for the cars that are being used. And we have a system where the taxes on space is property taxes, but then you get free roads in return. So I want to bring up a scenario. So you've got, let's say, a Walmart, you know, kind of at the edge of the city, right?
I think anyone can picture a Walmart in their heads right now.
Yeah. You know, giant parking lots. There's like two or three RVs parked in there somewhere. So, and you've got that. They are paying a very low amount of property tax per square foot because most of that is parking lot, and parking lots aren't valued a lot, so you don't pay tax on them. Mm-hmm. Versus if you get another setting, which is like a dense urban core in the downtown, like a shopping district somewhere, like yeah. The Forks, for example,
yeah.
Or even somewhere more dense, just like Portage Place as the mall or something, right? That pays a much higher amount of property tax per square foot because there's no parking involved or very limited parking. Mm-hmm. So what that means, and then, so you've got that. So there's way less money coming in from that Walmart at the edge of the city versus that, you know, the shopping place in the middle of the city.
Yeah.
But now you've got free roads. If you're in the middle of the city, you don't need a lot of free roads because you can walk everywhere. Like, you have an apartment, you can walk to shopping, you might be able to walk to work.
Or that's at least the hope, you can walk places.
Yeah. I mean, you know, walk or bike. But this is almost, this is worsened by the fact that roads are free. So this encourages people to drive, like I said. So you're better off living somewhere that pays low property taxes. Like, if you live in a suburb, you're going to pay lower property taxes per square foot because most of that is lawn,
yeah,
versus if you live in an apartment. So you've got people in the middle of the city paying more and getting less than people who live on the edge of the city.
Yeah.
But the people who live in the middle of the city are poorer than the people who live on the edge of the city. So you've got poor people paying in and rich people getting benefits. And even they've done studies on this. I think there's a company, it's called Urban 3.
Okay.
I'm not exactly clear, but they did a study for a city, like a city consulted them on where are we getting money, where are we losing money? Because we want to stop charging so much taxes for our population. And it turns out they were making a lot of money in the downtown area where everything was dense. And so providing services for that is relatively affordable. But when you got a suburb where everyone is living super far apart, there's giant lawns, there's driveways, and there's free roads, everything is super spread apart. So you need more stuff to provide the same services for the people living out of the city. And you need more of that than the people in the city. But the people in the city also pay more and they pay less. You're losing a lot of money to those people that live kind of on the edge of the city. And that's an issue where I think liberals and conservatives could agree that poor people shouldn't be subsidizing rich people.
No.
That, I think anyone can agree on that. But the reason that it will never be solved, at least as far as I can see, is because the one distinction is that suburbs win elections. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the last election, the midterms and the presidential in the US 2020, Joe Biden won that election because he won suburbs that before used to vote Republican. For example, right?
Yeah.
Suburbs win elections, whether it's here, whether it's in the US, whether it's in Ontario, whether it's in Manitoba. Suburbs are the swing vote that makes a difference between, for example, a conservative or an NDP government in Manitoba. Because of that, you've got an incentive to make these people as happy as possible. And that means doing this, even though this is an issue we can all agree on, it'll never be fixed. And that's the insane part to me.
And I mean, for those places, I mean, it's probably because they have the resources or availability to go vote. Like for a lot of people who are working paycheck to paycheck, sometimes it's like, well, can I afford to go vote, take off some time to go vote? Or if it's not even available or accessible in their area.
So another thing with that, part of the reason that suburbs win elections is because suburbanites vote more than people who are in the inner city. So that's like, A, they're swing voters, and B, they vote more. So you've really got an incentive to make them really happy, and that means having this horrid system.
Yeah, the problem with politics over, you know, the needs of people.
Okay, so I talked about how the system is corrupt and how poor people are subsidizing rich people, but I didn't say what an actual takeaway from this is. Like, what can we get from this? Even if we can't solve it completely, is there anything that we can do to make this fair? And the answer is, there are some things we can do. The first is that you can subsidize public transit more than you already do. Why do roads need to be profitable, but public transit needs to make money? Or roads don't need to make money, but public transit does. Why is that? And I think it's because we have a flawed understanding of public transit. We don't realize just how much we subsidize roads to the disadvantage of public transit. And the logic here goes that basically if we replaced all our cars with buses, how much road would we need? And the answer is a lot less than if we had cars, because normally there's one or two people in a car that fits four or five, and it just takes up so much space that doesn't need to. And that's what creates a lot of traffic. And that's why we need to build more roads too, because cars are so space inefficient. But one thing you can do is subsidize public transit and make it cheaper, because this is the reverse of what we do right now. So that would be takeaway one. Takeaway two is that we need to build more densely, because you can see from the case study about, for example, that Walmart versus a shop in downtown, about how the Walmart contributes far less in tax revenue, but takes more of the city's money for services than that shop in downtown, which contributes more and takes less per square foot. So one thing that cities can do to encourage, to stop losing money so much, is to encourage dense development that actually gives the city more in taxes than it takes through the services. And that would be step number two of what we can take away from this. And I think combining both of those solutions would allow cities to, ultimately, this isn't a conservative or liberal thing. This is really about money. And I think, you know, I think this is an issue that we can all agree on, that if we do both of these things, it'll help to counteract these negative effects. And ultimately, it'll lower the amount of taxes you pay. It'll make the system more efficient. It'll make it more fair. And I think that's just, it's just something we can all agree on as a solution to this problem.
Exactly.
Oh, that's interesting. And hey, these are conversations that people are having in debates. Like, if you want to learn more about that, yeah, why not check out the debate club sort of thing? Yeah. So that's one sort of topic. What are some other things that you're potentially talking about, or at least yourself would love to break down and have a debate on?
I think another one is obviously another major issue that we face as Canadians, which is climate change. That's a very big one. And at the debate club, we discuss, you know, what's the best solution? Would it be, for example, would it be nuclear? Would it be solar? Would it, you know, there's a whole bunch of ways, you know, wind power, things like that. Hydro is a big one in Manitoba. And, you know, that's something we discuss. How can we do this? What are the best ways to implement this? And this is obviously a challenge that affects, again, everyone. It doesn't matter who you are.
And I mean, those with less resources, the poor, disenfranchised, are usually affected by this way more.
If you're rich, you have more resources. You can deal with the problem much better if you have more resources for any problem than if you're poor and you have less resources. So, you know, these are things we discuss. And again, you know, what are the best solutions to questions like these, or even healthcare, again, affordability, the fact that we have a population, kind of a population decline in Canada. These are all major issues. So if you're interested in that and you're going to be going to university, or even if you're in high school or middle school and you have, maybe you have a debate club, maybe you want to start a debate club, you can talk to your teachers about that. And you can always contact U of M Debate Club, and we can maybe even help you get set up with a school debate club.
Well, it's about providing people skills and opportunity, right?
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
You want people to join. You want to give people the most opportunity to learn, gain knowledge. Like that's what we want to do here, right? We want to give people information. We want to give them the skills and tools they need to succeed.
We are all about providing resources, and we hope that you can come to the U of M Debate Club, or even just contact us and you can learn a couple of things.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about what you're going to school for?
I just finished second year. I'm going to third year. I'm studying actuarial math and statistics. So that's basically how insurance companies decide your rates based on the probability of an accident. Yeah. But that also goes into the investing part. So how you can invest your money and get a good return without having a lot of risk involved. Again, that risk management with your stock portfolio. And so it's about risk management both in investing and for everyday activities.
And there's so much you could learn from statistics. I'm not a math guy, but like seeing stats and seeing how they can kind of interpret data, sometimes things that feel like completely random on paper, but when you put it through a system, you can really get a better picture of what's going on.
And also another thing we learn in stats, though, is that it's equally important the data that you're putting in. One of my favorite professors, Jenna Tikhons, always says, garbage in, garbage out. So you need to make sure that you've got to ask. And even there's something we talk about is if you ask questions differently, you can get different results, which doesn't seem to make sense, but that's how it really is. Mm-hmm. So, So again, you've got to make sure that you're asking the questions in a fair way. And this kind of ties back to debate, where you want to make sure that you're doing things in a fair way. And you've got to, if you're doing a survey of any kind, you've got to ask the questions in a fair way that you'll end up with a result that actually reflects what people think.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited to see what comes out of the University of Manitoba's Debate Club this year.
I am as well. We're super excited for it. We're going to be, we're expanding. We're looking for more members, and we're going to be sending some people to tournaments in other provinces to really get our debate team back to where it was before the pandemic. So we are super excited.
Exactly. If you want to do some traveling, you want to do some arguing with other people, yeah, it's the place to go.
It is.
Stand. You picture of the Aspen Dells. Woodlands for us who know as well. Earth connected, aimed for skies. Conduits submerged, the lies. Music of the Aspen song. Whispers easy, makes them strong. Dawn to dusk, it lingers on. Often dead before they know that they're gone. Ever on, just one tree, but they're gone. Ever on, just one tree. I remember Aspen groves. They were born from far below, underground and out of sight. From one tree became the might. Always standing in one place, ever watching, holding space. Seedling, sapling, stately tall. Cycles one becomes the all. I remember Aspen groves. They were born from far below, underground and out of sight. From one tree became the might. I remember Aspen groves. They were born from far.
Sí. Christy Abraham, and I am the founder and the president of UM Debate Club.
So walk me through a little bit about the Debate Club. Why did you want to get it set up? What is it about debate that you're like, yes, let's do this. Let's set up a club. Because like it takes a lot of time and effort to start something like this.
It does. So in high school, or I could say more grade 7 and 8, I've done debate for like not that long, and I was excited to do it in my new school. But I didn't find it available to me. Like, we've had some debating sessions, like, in classes and whatever, but there wasn't, like, a club. And I really like the competitive aspect, and I feel like debate as a skill enhances your, like, thinking, your critical thinking skills, as well as your speaking and how you present yourself as a person. And I was excited to have debate in university since I didn't have it available in my high school, but to my demise, it was not available. So I was like, okay, let me try to get this started up. And I saw there was a lot of interest before having to actually like start it. You need to find like at least 10 people. So I went through the process and stuff. I got help doing the constitution and everything. And then I eventually created it.
Yeah. So last year was... Write off isn't the right word, but it was just kind of like an easing into things. Really couldn't go at it full force. What did it look like last year? You know, you're setting up the club, you're kind of getting excited. Things were still a little closed with COVID and everything. What does that look like? And what does it look like kind of heading into this year? Or I guess, what are you most excited about?
Well, I'm personally very excited about the tournaments and the competition, like the competitive side. It's just like really fun to like go to places and do debate. But like last year, we were just like starting off. We'd have trainings or meetings twice a week. I believe Mondays and Fridays, if I'm not. I think I might be wrong on the dates, but I can't.
That's okay. You were training twice
yes,
a week.
Yeah, twice a week. That's the important part. I wasn't doing the trainings. My social media person would coordinate the meetings because she had a lot of high school debate experience, which yeah. I personally didn't. So she would do a fantastic job of coordinating the meetings and like scheduling that. We would also have someone like externally come in and like help aid with the trainings as well.
What does a training session look like? Walk me through.
Okay.
I'm a novice walking in on my first day of debate. What are some things I should be thinking about? What are some of the skills or tools I should be utilizing to help me convey my point in this argument?
Okay, so there's like two styles. There's CP, Canadian Parliamentary, and BP, which is British Parliamentary. One of them has like two teams of two, and then the other one's four teams of four. And that one, I don't like that one as much because like if you get stuck with the backside, you're kind of screwed because like all the good points are pretty much taken, and you have to like have some elaborate points and to just like creatively
you
like,
gotta do some linguistic gymnastics.
Yes exactly. So basically we just talk about like the skills required, like what to do or like how to set up the debate, like how to write the motion and like how to like break down the motion. Okay. Like let's say you take like certain words and you have to like define the motion so like people can't like misinterpret and be like, oh, but this could have meant this. So, like, if you're, like, the first speaker, you have to, like, break down the motion into what each, not each word exactly, but, like, the main words, like, to what they mean. So, like, the other people going after you can't, like, skew it in their own way if that makes sense.
Misinterpret what you're trying to say.
Yeah. You can't make it, like, super, like, niche or, like, there's no, like, actual debating going on that's going to be, like, but what am I supposed to do with that after?
For the debate club, what are some topics that you're really excited to sink your teeth into?
I don't really have a specific, like, niche. Sometimes it's really fun to, like, debate the silly ones, like, that we should, like, ban violent video games. Like, there's just, like such a wide variety of things you could debate. There are some, like, oh, this house should, like, have this into like law or like have this into play. Those are like really fun to debate because like you get to see like the perspective of like one side. And even if you're not arguing it from like that one perspective, you'd like try to think of the other point. So it's like you can like prepare to refute it in your like rebuttals and stuff. So it's always fun to see like different perspectives and like point of views regarding like which side you're on. Like,
so there's a real wide variety of topics that you cover, whether it's more serious or ones that feel a little bit more fringe or niche.
Yeah,
I'd be interested to hear a conversation about, you know, why violent video games could be banned. Because, like, we hear it all the time in the media when, like, a tragedy happens. They're like, it's video games, it's movies or other literature that's causing this, when they're completely ignoring, like, the real issues behind why these sorts of events happen.
I also think it's like, even if you ban it, there are always going to be like underground ways to get sort
like
of
prohibition, right?
Exactly. It's just like banning, it's not really going to do anything. It's just like, if something's banned, you're going to like want to get it even more. It's like rare and like prized and sought after. So it's just like, you're going to create more demand in no kind of way than like if it wasn't really.
Yeah,
you know?
When an authority figure is like, you can't play Call of Duty anymore. Well, of course, more 13-year-olds are going to want to play Call of Duty.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, you can't do this. Or like, don't put your hand on the stove. And it's like, yeah, I want to put my hand on the stove. It's just like, yeah, that kind of like mindset of things.
Okay, let's look at another topic and how you would address it. One that I feel is very prevalent right now is climate change. Yeah, human-caused destruction of the environment, whether that is the rising temperatures or the plastics and other chemicals that we're kind of spreading everywhere. How would you open a debate when you're on the side of like, yes, we need climate action now sort of thing?
I would honestly probably put it to the government as well as big corporations, because as individuals, like, it's not really, I mean, it is up to us. Like, we still make an impact, but
Thank you. We still
do. I need to acknowledge that. But I feel like corporations get a slide, and like big businesses and like companies get a slide with everything. Because as long as they're giving like the government money, why would they like, you know, say no? But I feel like if the stress is put into the government as well as these big companies, like big changes can actually happen. Like, if the big corporations are taxed more or some sort of fine or whatever is created, then like big changes can actually happen. But that's not how things are currently. So yeah,
that's not the politics
right?
The conversation about climate change, that's not the one we're having to today, but like, it is just interesting to try and think about things. And I think that's what the powerful thing of debate can do, is that you get a topic and you really get to the bones of it to figure out, you know, what is this all about? Why do people feel a certain way about this issue? What are some of the policies or changes that we could do, like for climate change, as you mentioned, taxes on corporations, changes in public opinion on the types of energy sources that we use, not these like campaigns to be like, it's on you as an individual consumer to solve the problem. So it's very interesting to see how debate goes. So for the upcoming debate year, how do people sign up? Like, how many people are you looking for, and what will the year look like?
The next year, we already have like our executive team, which is where all of us are very excited to like see what the new year is going to look like. We are planning a lot of like, hopefully a lot of tournaments and like competitions. Hopefully some in like Alberta and Saskatchewan, some that are like pretty close by. I guess a lot of trainings as well. And as how to sign up, you pretty much just like go to the like meeting and like go regularly, because going once or twice won't do too much for you.
It's a skill you have to practice.
Yes, it's just like you just build on what you know. And it may be intimidating for like the first time you go, because it's like, oh, I don't know what to say. Like, and then like people just like usually just sit back and watch, but it's like you learn more from actually doing it than watching. Like, yes, you can still pick up some skills by watching, but you need to just like put yourself out there and like, you know, speak.
Well, it's a great opportunity, right? And very, like you're mentioning the different skills that you can build on. Not only is it how you present yourself and how you can articulate yourself. Therindu was mentioning that, you know, these sorts of skills are great for applying throughout your life,
for like a job interview or things like that. You can sell yourself better.
I agree. Like, it also just like helps you present yourself in a, like a better way, because it's like public speaking is like a skill to have for like ever. You're always going, like, there's going to be classes where you need to do group presentations. Or even if you're just like talking to people you don't really know, like it helps you put yourself out there more than like one would regularly do. Like if you're really shy and stuff, it's like, okay, I'll just keep to myself. But if you have those like public speaking skills, like it helps you grow more confident in the way you speak and like the way you present yourself. So that's always a good thing to have. So yeah,
exactly. And what is it, something that like people are more afraid of public speaking than death, I think, was the thing. You know what? Let me confirm that glossophobia, or fear of public speaking, is a very common phobia and one is believed to affect up to 75% of the population.
Crazy.
There we go. Interesting. So, yeah, a lot of people have a fear of public speaking. So this is a great opportunity to attack that fear. What is it called? Exposure therapy.
Yes. I feel like, because of like the fear, because like, oh, this person's gonna judge me, what if I like stumble upon my words, or like, oh, I just look stupid. I feel like, yeah, those are all very like valid feelings to have. Like, I'm personally not that good at public speaking myself. Like, I've got very limited experience compared to some people I know, which is like, it gets very intimidating at times. It's just like, what if I say something stupid? What if I just like pause? It's just, I think like it's just like bound to happen. And that's just all part of like the learning experience. It's like, if you don't do something, how are you going to know how good at it you're going to become? Like, you're just never going to know until you try.
You never know. This might be your secret talent.
Exactly.
You've never had the opportunity to have it bloom and grow. And if we're talking about embarrassing yourself, I just fumbled over a Google search. So, like, yeah. How embarrassing can...
Yeah, like, I feel like we all do embarrassing things. It's just like, but this thing can actually become something, like, bigger. So maybe it's worth the embarrassment for a little bit until you get better at it.
Yeah, you never know. Like, they'll come at you, they beat you in the debate, and you're like, huh, well, I might have been embarrassed, but now I learned how to utilize that, or what my weaknesses were in this sort of argument.
Like, you always, like, analyze each thing you do and be like, okay, I did bad here, but I did good here, and this is what I can do to improve for the next time I debate.
So what are you going to school for?
I'm currently in the Faculty of Arts, and I'm hopefully going to join anthropology. I'm not officially in it yet, but I need to take like one class to officially...
Fingers crossed, right?
Yeah, I need to take that one class to get into the field.
Tournaments. What do those look like? What is the structure of a tournament when going out?
So I actually been to one tournament last year all by myself because everybody was very busy. It was in British Columbia, so it was very pretty. It was a B, I think it was a BP. If not, it's like the two, the four against four.
Yeah.
The one I don't like. So, yeah, I didn't really enjoy that one that much because I don't like the structure too much of it. But it was a fun time. The topics like were really like had a variety of topics. There was one about like feminism. There was one about like renting, whatever, like that the renting time should be like time capped.
Yeah.
And then there was one about like education and like it was like something about like upper education. I can't remember. Something about education. There's just like a variety of topics, and like you get pretty limited time to prep, and it's just like you're on your own.
Yeah, if you don't know it beforehand, you're kind of in a catch-up situation.
And it's just like you got very limited time, and then you just gotta go. I personally like kind of enjoy writing my speeches, which is kind of time-consuming, but I feel like it just helps me like know what to say.
Organize
and, like,
your thoughts a little bit.
I also like sometimes just like write topic points on what to say, and it's just like, it just gets really messy if you see someone's writing on like their paper and like how they're gonna like present themselves. But also I feel like POIs is like points of information. It's like when people like ask you questions about what you're saying. I feel like they can be really, really useful, especially if it's like you're trying to kill time. You can just take those, and it's like it helps with your time because there's like times you need to speak for. You can always go under, but it's not really like preferred, but yeah.
That sounds like a lot of fun. So it's just another thing. Like if people want to travel, they want to go and tackle interesting topics,
This club seems like the place to be.
Yes, I would highly recommend people try it out.
Stick, is there anything else that you would like to add about the club? Maybe just about the current members, you know, what it's going to look like in the school year in terms of, like, involvement and engagement, like, what is the time commitment sort of thing?
Like, I don't think that there's, like, too much time commitment. Like, it's twice a week, but, like, obviously if you can't make it, that's fine. Like, try to go as many times as you, like, can, especially, like, since school is going on. But, like, the more times you go, I feel like it's going to help you as a person, like, grow your skill. So if there's, like, one week you can't make it, and, like, you could go another week or just whatever works best for you. But, like, I don't, like, I would recommend people go more than, like, once or a few times.
Give it a try.
Yeah, like, go a few times, and if you don't like it, that's okay. Like,
not everything's for everyone,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And if there's anything we can, like, improve on, you can go to me, go to any of my members. We're always open to improvements and suggestions and comments.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you're enjoying the content, make sure you head to u-channel.ca for more from U Multicultural. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U Talk. Join me again next Tuesday for another episode connecting with people from your community.
You're real good at building walls, walls that no one else can see. You're real good at building walls, yeah, walls that separate you from me. And now I try to hammer them down, I try to hammer them down. I ended up breaking you down, I ended up breaking us down. Your walls had such nice windows, yeah, with pretty flowers that smelled so sweet. Your walls had such nice windows, yeah, from where you would smile back at me. And I tried to shatter them down, I tried to shatter them down. I ended up breaking you down, I ended up breaking us down. Now those windows, they don't open for me. I wonder, did they ever really, will they ever open for me? I guess we'll never know, I guess we'll never know.
You're real good at building walls, walls that no one else can see. I pray one day those walls will fall, yeah, and let your light shine.